hard to describe, but there's an element of mystery.
Yeah.
It brings families together, brings communities together.
I know you used to fish the tournament scene a little bit, right? You won the Bisbees yourself, right? Yeah. So why aren't you fishing tournaments anymore?
You could be tough. You could be demanding.
Yep.
You want to extract the best out of the people. And you got blood all over him. And he looked at me and he says, I think this is the first time I have blood on you that is not mine.
Oh my gosh.
You've landed on the science of fishing, where passion meets precision. Before we dive in, we would like to thank Bloody Battery, Sea Mule, and Black Reef Co. for sponsoring this episode.
What's going on, everybody? Mark here with another episode of The Science of Fishing. We're here today on The Bad Company, the 144 Trinity, with Anthony Shea. It's been an absolute pleasure to get to know him over the past couple of hours, and now we're going to get into it with you guys and learn all about the world tour, what Anthony's about, and everything that he's got going on. And he's a legend, guys, so get ready for a good one. What's going on, Anthony? How are you, sir?
Well, you just mentioning the world tour and talking about that, it just gave me an instant headache, but I'm good.
Why? Why is it giving you a headache, man? What's going on?
I'll tell you, the logistics is mind-boggling.
Really?
It's more than I thought. It's my full-time job right now.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot to go over.
I'm sure. How many boats are in the fleet right now, just moving around? And
so we have three motherships.
Okay.
So the 144 is going to join the world tour next year and cover North Atlantic.
Nice.
We can get into a little bit of those details.
Sure.
The 150 is the one that we've been using since the start of the world tour, which is June 2022. The 150 is going to cover what we call the Southern Hemisphere. So it's going to call Cape Town its home. And it's going to cover South Indian and South Atlantic.
Okay.
And then the 175, that's been delayed for a year. We had a MTU motor blow up on the sea trial. That hopefully is going to be done in the next month. And that's going to cover all of the Pacific North and Southern Pacific. And then we have a half a dozen game boats that are positioned across the world that pair up with these motherships.
That's incredible.
The whole design is Northern Hemisphere and Southern Hemisphere have different opposite seasons.
Right.
And the whole design is to chase large blue and black marlin every month out of the year.
Gotcha. So before we kind of get into what the world tour is, I kind of want to understand a little bit about you and what inspired you to, you know, chase a world tour. From my understanding, you know, I've done a little bit of research about you. I've looked into you a bit. You know, I admire what you do. And it's a dream of mine to, God willing, one day reach your level. But I know you came, you were an immigrant, right? You guys came, your family came, and you would drive from California to Cabo, right?
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Kind of condense my life story a bit.
So yeah.
My mom and dad are from China. I came to the States in California when I was eight. So English is actually my second language. And as I grew up, I discovered fishing and an ocean. And I worked as a deckhand in sport boats out in Southern California. That's where I learned my work ethic. When you work, you know, pretty much 19 hours a day flinging fish for 3 hours at the end of the day, you really get a feel for the outdoors. You get a feel for what it's like to put in an honest day's work. And from there, I bought my first boat, age 18, a 17-foot whaler. And Southern California fishery is fairly limited. You know, we have a short summer season there, so I started to stretch it out. And at 18 years old, I towed that thing 1,000 miles into Cabo San Lucas.
Wow. So what was it like driving from Cali all the way to Cabo? And what were you getting after? Striped marlin? What were you doing down there? What was your prerogative?
Mark, we didn't care. We just wanted to go. You know, we had $60 in our pocket, being two guys. So yeah. $180 will last us for 10 days. And that's including gas money, hotel money. You know, we didn't go in the hotels. We pitched the tent on the beach.
Sure.
And launched the whaler from the beach. And we caught everything. We caught sails, blue marlin, striped marlin, amberjack, dorado, wahoo. Anything and everything.
Is there anything from that time that stands out to you, you know, that start for you?
A lot of it. I mean, what really stands out is, you know, we wasn't fishing, and that is, you know, we had like three cows. on these trips going down. A lot of, mountain roads, and you don't see what's around you. And I had a 1984 Toyota pickup with, a four cylinder, and you see a cow going 40, 50 miles an hour coming around the corner, you're not going to stop.
Yeah.
Boom.
Really?
Yeah, and they bounce off the bumper, they get out, and they run away.
While you're towing the boat?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. One time we had the boat kind of jump off a little bit, but...
Oh, my goodness. It was all good. Well, that's insane. So talk to me a little bit about the transition from that to now. That's a long time in between, but you went from, having a little 17-foot whaler, driving it from Cali all the way to Mexico, and then now you're on a world tour. I know you started Loan Depot and you had a bunch of different projects and kind of were able to, get ahead and do what you need to do.
Okay. Well, let's see how I can condense 35 years. Fishing has been my passion, my lifestyle, my hobby, my life, really.
Yeah.
Most guys that you walk down the marina, they make the money and then they buy the boat and then they get into fishing.
Right.
When I was in fishing when I was catching, bass. So, as my resources grew, my curiosity is always, a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
When I was 17, 18, I was curious about getting to Cabo. And now I'm curious about covering all six hemispheres of three major oceans, Indian, Pacific, and Atlantic.
Wow.
And I find myself reading and talking to biologists and scientists and trying to understand these fish. And another topic is these fish needs to be understood and they need to be protected because they are a very important part of the earth, particularly of the ocean. 70% of the way we live is salt water. And that salt water needs to have some sort of health and balance to it. And the creatures that it lives within the oceans. But as my financial resources grew, my assets, my boats grew. I went from a 17-footer to a 25, and 25 to a 32, and a 32 to a 33, and 37, a 38, and 54, and 60, and 72, and on and on and on and on. But there's one thing that I always lacked, and that was time.
Right.
That's the most precious commodity that we have. And between, founding three different companies, my entire career was based on scale and technology and efficiency. And fortunately, I built three companies as a result of it. Loan Depot was actually started by mistake in 2010.
Really?
I sold my second company to Interactive Corp. Actually, it was sold in 2004. And I wanted to go fishing, and I did. Between 2006 and 2009, and I got bored. As much as I wanted to fish at that point, I wasn't ready to fish full time.
Right.
So I decided to build another organization, and that's how Loan Depot was created in 2010. And within 10 years, we became the second largest mortgage provider in the nation, only second after a great competitor and a friend, which is Rocket Mortgage.
Sure.
So from a standing start, we beat Chase in year 8, we beat Bank of America in year 9, and we beat Wells Fargo, the Stagecoach, that's over 100 years old, in year 10.
So, right.
Really, 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 really rock that business. And then unfortunately, 3.5 years ago, I lost my father and I lost my best friend.
I'm sorry.
And that's when I decided, I need something different.
Sure.
So that's when we really started to come up with a plan with the world.
So during that time that you were building these companies and most recently Loan Depot, did you still have that itch to get out there or were you in company building mode,
So I was fishing 60 to 100 days a year every year. So I averaged about 80 days a year. So between that, being a CEO and being a family man, I had to give everything up. So golf, tennis, water skiing, motorcycle riding, car racing. I got into everything.
Wow.
I just gave everything up. So really? I focused on fishing when I was in my early 20s. I gave everything up. So I'm a dork with absolutely everything other than you put a fishing rod in my hand, then I'm okay.
Well, nowadays, now you get to fish full time. This is your full time job now, the world tour, right?
Yeah.
So now that you're in world tour mode, I know we were talking a little bit about it before, you know, run me through what a typical day looks like and like, what is your mental focus during that? You know, are you fun fishing or are you treating this like you're building Lone Depot again? Or are you treating this like a job?
There's been a lot of surprises. So the biggest surprise is year one of the world tour and the first few legs, we went to known spots. They're exotic, but they're known. Madeira, Azores, spots such as that, Cape Verde. And then as the legs started to grow, then we started going to areas that are a little less unknown. Brazil, as an example, Southern Hemisphere, no infrastructure, no marinas, no fuel docks. It's a mothership type of requirement.
Right.
And then leg seven, which is what we just completed, was Ascension. Getting to Ascension was, I think getting to the moon probably would have been a little easier.
Really?
But we made it there, we fished, and we can't wait to go back next year.
How was that experience at Ascension? I mean, that's my dream to go there and catch those big yellows and do all that.
It's hard to describe, but there's an element of mystery.
Yeah.
There's an element of knowing that you're truly remote. I mean, the island, I think, is 4 miles by 5 miles. There's no lee. So there's really, you know, you can't really get away from the wind. And this being a hot water year, it was 3 degrees above normal there, and the wind was howling 20 to 30 knots every day. And we just got our brains beat out.
Really?
On a 33-footer for 27 days straight. So when we go on these trips, we are fishing sun up to sundown. I don't take a half day off to walk the beach. I don't check out the island. I mean, we are absolutely disciplined fishing sun up to sundown. But going back to your question, you know, what's world tour like? The amount of time that I spend on the phone talking to people in each individual area that is less known is extreme.
So how come?
Because you can't get a fish report. You can't get a weather report. So these are areas where when you go, there's not a network of people that you can rely on to give you information. And most of these places are only fished 3-4 months out of the year, only by a handful of charter boats that are 22-foot outboard boats. There's just lacking data, lacking information. And for us to position a mothership and position our assets and fly over there and spending 30 days or so, we need to put ourselves in the spot that we have the best chance to enjoy trophy fishing.
Right.
So, you know, you really need to really do your homework and trying to figure out whether you go to spot A, spot B, or spot C. Those are all areas that are in consideration. So, for example, this year we're going to Bazaruto in Indian Ocean. Next year we're going to go back to Ascension. And possibly we're going to fish Angola next year. So these are all sort of considerations you need to think about. And we were going to go to Northern Indian Ocean, but because of the Suez Canal and the war that's happening, all the conflict,
yeah,
we won't be able to go there for a little while.
Jeez. So on this world tour, from my understanding, you have 3 target species, right? The blue marlin, the black marlin, and the surface swords, right?
Yeah.
So run me a little bit, you know, of what makes you decide go where? You know, in Ascension, what exactly? Are you targeting all 3? Well, probably not. You know, some different places have different species. But how do you decide where to go to next based on what species? You know, is it based off of, I haven't caught enough blue marlin, I haven't caught enough blacks? What is, you know, the itinerary and why is it the way it is?
So the original design was trophy blue and black marlin and then surface swordfish. There are no black marlin, not in a way where you would catch them in the Atlantic. There's been spots, you know, there's been reports of a few being seen in the South Atlantic, but so far I would tell you that seeing a large blue marlin it is the most addicting thing I've ever done. And I do miss fishing for black marlin, and that's why we're going to go to Bazarito this year and fish for them. And the next year, we're going to go back to the Great Barrier Reef and fish for black marlin on the spawn. But chasing these large blue marlin, and I have to grin, it's addicting. And originally, we were going to do the World Tour for 3 years. Now we stretched it out to 4. I don't know if it's ever going to stop. Seeing a large blue marlin, and on the World Tour, we've seen 5 over 1,200. Fortunately, we hook all of it. Unfortunately, we pull the hook on all of them. These giants, I mean, 700 pounder is big. 900 pounder is big. 1,000 pounder is big. And we have not weighed one over 1,000. We let some go that are 950 plus here or there. But we just seen one at Azores, it was 1,200 pounder. And they are,
whoa,
they're massive.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of fun.
What is your goal with this? Is it to catch one unbelievable fish, or is it about numbers game? What is it?
We have one hopeful outcome. The one hopeful outcome is to have one fish that we can look back and talk about. That's our hope.
Okay.
Really not our goal. That's really our hope, because in fishing, you're not in control.
Right.
Anybody thinks you're in control, you know, then that's catching, and that's not what we do, right?
Yeah.
Our goal is to keep everybody safe, to stay out of trouble, to have a positive impact for Americans, and have a positive impact for sportsmanship every place that we visit.
Okay.
That is our goal, because that is what we can control. We can't control the fishing. We can't control what we catch. We can't control the weather. Can't control the currents, but we can control our attitude and how we represent the world as Americans.
Right.
That's really important to us.
So talking a little bit about, you know, representation and sport fishing as a whole, you know, there's this whole new thing called the Sport Fishing Championship, right? And I've gotten to know those guys a little bit personally, and I've seen that they're trying to basically make a better name for sport fishing as a whole. They're trying to raise awareness, and they're trying to build up the industry. You know, golf has the PGA, that football has the NFL. Now there's the Sport Fishing Championship. You know, Mark Neufeld pretty well, from what I understand. You know, what is your opinion? What's your take on building such a league that, in my opinion, I think is going to be great for the younger generations and my generation coming up, but you,
seeing things. I have some strong feelings in components. Mm-hmm. So the first thing we need to understand is sport fishing in the human race is a baby. The humans have fished for food since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
But to go fishing for fun, it's already been only 110, 120 years old, right? It's well documented back to the fishing clubs, and a lot of that originated in the U.S. So we need to understand the sport fishing as a sport is fairly new.
Yeah.
Second, fishing is the most popular recreational sport on God's planet. Soccer has nothing on fishing. More people fish. It brings families together, brings communities together. But our sport lacks heroes, right?
Yeah.
Every organized sport, whether it's whatever, right? You got your Tiger Woods and Michael Jordan.
And Tom Brady. And
right. We don't. So I think the Sport Fishing Championship is trying to create that. And I applaud them for doing that. I also think our sport lacks sportsmanship. So if you look at any other sport, even cyclists or surfers or golfers, there's an element of sportsmanship. Our sport, there's a lot of trash talking.
Yeah.
Too much.
Very much so.
And I think that happens as a result of lack of direction at the top. But it's just really important for many of us to lead the sport in a little better position than the way that we found it. And it's the inspiration that draws the next generation up.
Yeah.
And, you know, we hope to contribute a little bit to that.
In front of me, I have the Flushmaster by Seemule. This little device simplifies the process for flushing your engines. All it takes is three easy steps. Plug the hose into the device, plug the hoses from the device into your motors, and press on. That's all it takes to preserve the longevity of your motors, ensuring 100% clean water is running through them. So if you want to preserve your motors, go to Seemule.com and go pick up a Flushmaster.
So you're talking a little bit about sportsmanship, and I kind of want to go and shift gears a little bit to tournament scene. I know you used to fish the tournament scene a little bit, right? You won the Bisbees yourself, right?
Yeah.
So why aren't you fishing tournaments anymore? What is it that is not doing it, I guess?
Tournaments are high energy.
Isn't the World Tour as well, though?
It's different. Tournaments is where, you know, you get to measure up, right? Same location, same rules, different boats, different equipment, different talents.
Yeah.
I did tournaments for 21 years. And up until just 2 years ago, we held the record for the highest payout, $3.9 million. And that was back in 2006 or something like that. So you can imagine $3.9 million.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. So we won a total of $7.8 million. I think we collectively, other teams have beat that by now. But, you know, we had our time. We, you know, the next generation is now, you know, putting it together.
Right.
If we ever enter the tournament scene, we will get our clocks clean. Because, you know, you can enter a tournament. There's no barrier to entry. You write a check. You got a boat that floats. You got a hook. You're fishing tournaments.
Right.
But if you want to be successful, if you want to be successful consistently, you got to give up almost everything just to fish. Absolutely, just fish tournaments.
Really?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you want to be, I mean, yeah, you can go out there and put a lure in the water and have a big one jump on. And,
sure.
But if you want to be successful with the tournament scene, with different formats, releases, numbers, and then jackpots and heaviest fish, if you want to be successful over a period of time,
yeah,
you have to be completely devoted to it. And we did that. The restrictions with that is that you can't travel.
Because
you have to have your boat where the tournaments are. But it works fine for somebody like me that was working and raising a family. I have 80 days a year. I put 50 days of it in tournament fishing and another 30 days go have fun at Night Bay or something.
Right.
But now I have the luxury of time. That's the most precious resource is time. And I want to utilize that time as best as I can. I like fishing heavy gear. I like fishing heavy pressure. And, you know, I'll do it until I can't do it.
Right. So as time has gone on, you've had kind of a right-hand man, right? Captain Steve. Yep. Would you say he's, you guys have known each other for a long time.
We've been together for almost 22 years.
Wow. So where did that friendship start and how?
So he was my hero when I was coming up, you know, when I had my Whaler, and then when I had a 25-foot center console called a Cutty Con with twin 150 two-cycle Yamaha. And, you know, I just always know of him. And then, you know, two crazy fishermen got together. Technically, you know, he's my captain, and I employ him, but we're just two buddies that fished together for a long period of time. I mean, the guy really has... He's the only captain that ever driven for me. I drove until 21 years ago, 22 years ago. Before that, I was driving.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was driving.
So you guys got to really see, like, each other grow as fishermen and through life and families and everything kind of throughout the years.
Yeah. Lots of different boats, lots of different fishing, lots of days on the water.
Yeah.
You know, we think the same in regards to fish.
Yeah.
And just been a good match. But, you know, we have an amazing team. Obi, our wireman, has been with me for over 20 years.
Wow.
Our other captain, co-captain Kevin Bohannon's been working with me now for 10 years. And then Steve Sun is our videographer that doubles in that deckhand. I've known him since he was... 3, 4, 5 years old.
Oh, he does a great job. I've seen his work.
Great job. And then, of course, we have our support staff on the
right
on the motherships that really keep things managed well until the fishing boys come in.
So when you build a team like this, you've been with them for a long period of time. What do you look for?
What you want at the end of the day is you want someone that really understands the team concept.
Right.
We all have egos. You know, we all have bad days.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you have to put the team first, including the owner.
Yeah.
Including the owner. Yeah, I'm the boss. I make the decisions. But at the end of the day, if you want good guys to work for you and you want to be on the boat 12, 14, 16 hours a day, nobody wants to work for a jerk.
Yeah.
Right? You can be tough. Right? You could be tough. You could be demanding.
Yep.
You want to extract the best out of the people, right, on your team.
Yep.
But you can't be a jerk.
Right.
If you're a jerk over time, these guys all can go out and get 25 jobs. They don't have to work for me.
Sure.
Hopefully they want to continue to work for me. But you know, you got to be very, very selective because, you know, you can get sideways real quick. You know, if you leave your damn toenails on the counter, I mean, that's that over a period of time, you know, people get offended. They rub each other the wrong way and egos get bruised and the team falls apart. And, you know, we have our challenges too.
Right.
You know, we're going on 2 years now and a lot of stressful times and you just try to keep it together.
Sure. Sure. So speaking of keeping it together, you do a lot of different things. You're always fishing all over the world, but you always bring it back and give back to the community. Right. So you have a nonprofit also that you put on, right? It's Heroes on the Water. Is that correct?
Right.
So what inspired you to do that? And what is your goal with that?
Before the world tour, I've always invited vets out fishing. You take them out for the day and they're appreciative. They love it. You guys know how incredibly rewarding it is to take somebody on the boat and have them hooked up to a fish, right?
Yeah.
The excitement is pretty rewarding. And One year, I just decided, you know what? I'm going to do something a little bit more extreme. I'm going to pick 8 vets, and I'm going to take them on a Cabo trip in 4 days and take them on my jet and just give them I'm just going to give them the raw, the red carpet. So I put a trip together. We invited 8 vets, and everybody's super excited. They get on my plane. Everybody's having a blast. We get to Cabo, we fly to Cabo, and I had a whole bunch of custom swag made for them. Shorts, hats, and lures, and then I had every one of them a rod, custom rod made, with the reels on it. And every one of the rods had their names on it.
Wow.
And they walked in the boat, and they see all the swag within the rods. It was a, hey, welcome. These are for you guys. And they, you know, one guy said, you know, what is all this? This is for you. And out of 8 of them, 3 of them dropped to the knees and started crying.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's when it hit me. That's when it hit me real hard. And for the next 3 days, it was just like on cloud 9 to these guys. I mean, the bonding that I had with these guys as a civilian was pretty insane.
Yeah.
So right after that trip, I decided that I got to try to figure out how to do this a little bit more, and it needs to be a multi-day event. So we started War Heroes on Water. We're in our 8th year now. Last 3 years, we raised between 1.2 and 1.4 million of cash every single year.
Wow.
We have taken out 125 to 150 wounded vets every year.
Oh, my goodness.
The last 3 years, we've had 50 yachts donated from the local community in Southern California, where guys are donating not only their fuel, their yacht, their crew, their bait, but they're donating 5 days of their time and taking 3 vets onto their boat and sleeping on their boat for 3 nights.
That's incredible.
And it's just, it's been amazing. The suicide rate is 22 vets a day, or 7%.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm happy to report that we're starting to reverse that course on the people that come to our M Tour events.
That's incredible, man. I mean, God bless you for doing something like that. And, you know, being able to affect people's lives, it's quite inspiring to see someone like of your caliber go out into the world and do what he wants and kind of put on this world tour that is just unheard of, never seen before, just like Ernest Hemingway-esque of just, you know, just grandiose, but also coming back and saying, hey, I want to give back to these communities. I want to give back to the vets, the people that support us and protect us. And, you know, just want to say, God bless you, man, for doing something like that. It's quite inspiring. And, you know,
we're not doing anything that, you know, that's out of the ordinary. We're just trying to reach out a little bit. I mean, we complain when the line at Starbucks is too long.
Yeah.
These guys are missing a year. They got brain fluids draining and no legs, no fingers, no arms, side of the face missing. And they're just the land of the brave, man. These guys are, guys and gals are just ridiculous. Maggie, I had Maggie on my boat 3 years ago. She's in a wheelchair, lost both of her legs from the knees down. And she was just happy as can be. And she says, you know what? If I know what was going to happen to me, I would do all over again.
Really? That just gave me chills.
No, I would do all over again. You know, and then I had another vet who, you know, I won't name, came to me at a Warwick's banquet on year four. We're going on year eight now. He says, Mr. Sheikh, can I speak to you for a minute? I said, sure. So we pull up to the side after the war's banquet. He says, is it possible for me to have my 9-year-old son meet you? And I said, yeah, sure. Because you don't need to pay for me. I'll fly him in, and I just want 15 minutes of your time at your home, at a coffee shop, at your work, wherever you need to be. I want my 9-year-old son to meet you. I said, yeah, absolutely. He says, do you know why, sir? I said, no, why? Because I want my son to meet the man that saved his dad's life.
Wow. That's insane. That's incredible, man.
And all we did was take him fishing for it.
Yeah.
But what makes the difference here is that we care. And it gives them an entirely different belief system that they matter.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're out there protecting us as the greatest country, and they're wounded.
Yep.
And once they're wounded, they're no good to the U.S. government anymore. You're damaged good. So now you're sent home.
Yeah.
You're sent home and you have all this energy and testosterone and now all your buddies are still there getting shot. So this is why it's so hard for them to get back into society.
It's a lot of stress.
It's a lot of stress and it's a lot of guilt.
Yeah.
It's a lot of guilt because they've seen their brothers and sisters die. And then their brothers and sisters continue to die and they're at home twirling their thumbs.
Yeah.
So that, I don't know all of it, but after 8 years spending time with these guys, I begin to, you know, understand their struggles a bit.
Sure. Have you had any memorable moments with these guys on the water?
Oh, many, many.
Can you tell us about one or two of them?
I framed the paper town downstairs, And one year we were just wide open bluefin tuna. We have bluefin tuna everywhere, 200 pounders and bloods everywhere. And Caleb was just so happy and he had blood all over him. And he looked at me and he says, I think this is the first time I had blood on you that is not mine.
Oh my gosh. Whoa. That's pretty crazy.
No, it's funny. He had blood all over his face, all over his body, and he just thought about it for a minute. He goes, I think this is the first time I have blood on me that's not my own.
My goodness. That's crazy.
For those of you that don't know what this right here is a turtle box. A turtle box is a marine-grade speaker. It's the best one on the market, y'all. If you guys want to go get one, check the link in the description. I always use it anytime I'm out there on the water, whether I'm at the beach, whether I'm fishing, wherever I am, this always comes with me. I love listening to the music and the sound quality and audio is the best out there. Forget all the other brands. You need a turtle box.
So, you know, you get on the water a lot with these guys and then now you're in your personal life some parts of the year. Talk to me a little bit about what are some memorable catches you've had. I mean, you've had how many surface swords, you said? 10?
I've had 10 surface swords.
That's remarkable.
I'm very, very fortunate with that. I caught my 10th one last year. The gap between number 9 and number 10.
How long was that?
Years.
Wow.
But in the last, since the World Tour started, we haven't really dedicated almost any days into surface swords. Surface swords and blue marlin fishing are completely two different oil and water.
Yeah.
They just don't mix at all. They're different oceans, different climates, all types of that. But, surface swords are great. And I will tell you that pound for pound, in my opinion, surface swords are the strongest, if not the strongest.
Really? What's your most memorable one? I saw one that was a bill of one downstairs.
The most memorable one was the one that got away. So I hooked one that was around 600 pounds. And I pulled on it for 4.5 hours. And it jumped 10 feet behind the transom, straight out, tail out, straight up in the air.
Whoa.
4 hours in, and we looked at each other like, oh, I don't think this thing's tired. And we pulled the hook 4.5 hours later. That was 600 plus.
Wow. That's insane.
Yeah, on 80-pound test, I don't know if you can catch a fish like that on 80-pound test on a surface sword.
No? You don't think you can back down on that thing hard enough? And
well,
it's got a lot of energy.
Surface swords, they don't run.
Okay.
They don't run.
So what do they do?
So, I use a Talca 20 and Talca 25. People are looking at me and say, oh, this guy's stupid because you're going to get spooled. Well, surface swords do not run. When you hook them, they just sit there like a diesel truck. They just don't go anywhere. You just, they're...
It's a dead weight fight?
It's just a dead weight. They just kind of, they're doing gymnastics down there. They're weird. They do backflips, flip around. They do directional changes. They'll come up and whack the rudder. They'll whack the prop. Oh, they're mean.
Really? They'll attack the boat?
Oh, yeah.
They'll oh, my goodness.
Boat. The number one rule is drive away from them.
Away.
Blue marlin is you want to go chase them?
Yeah.
With a surface sword. I don't have any experience at deep drop, so I'm not commenting on that at all. But on a surface sword, number one rule is stay away from them.
So how do you land that fish?
Once they get tired, obviously, you inch up to it.
Yeah.
But when they're fresh, you actually want to drive away from them.
That's incredible. So that's, like you said, oil and water. That's completely the opposite of marlin.
It's completely different.
So... What's
marlin is very fast, despite the blue marlin. Body counts are different. But a swordfish, they really don't get excited. A surface swords out of the 30 or so that I hooked, that I caught 10, I've only had 2 jump. So they don't jump.
Yeah.
Then the deep drop ones jump.
Yeah.
But the surface ones, they don't jump. They just
interesting.
They stay between 50 and 150 feet and they just cruise.
Wow. So when you approach a fish like that, they don't get spooked, right? We talked a little bit about this earlier. I was curious, can you tell me again why they don't get spooked by a massive boat coming in? Or
they get startled.
Yeah.
They get startled. They're very dominant personality. When they're on the surface, they're not feeding. They're not in the feeding mood at all. I mean, they got these giant swords and giant eyes, but they feed in the deep.
Yeah.
They're caught. When they're up on top, they want the heat of the sun and, the pressure is different. So when they relieve themselves, we've seen many of them relieve themselves on the surface. As soon as they're done relieving themselves, they go right back down.
Oh, wow.
So you see the water completely brown up. And once they brown up and then they twist, they do some of the funniest things. They twist. I can't even describe it. They twist when they're relieving themselves. And once the water brown out, they're gone. They go right back down.
So how long is that time period from when they come up, you think, and then they go back down? Like, are you catching these fish in a 10-minute window?
They like high pressure. They don't like strong currents. So you usually see them a knot and a half, 2 knots. If you have a 3-knot current, they usually don't come up. They usually don't come up when you have wind that exceeds 10 miles an hour. So anything that white caps... You still see them, but just not as much.
Yeah.
So the entire sort of objective when you see a surface sword is you want to really just piss it off.
Yeah.
You want them to have their predatory instincts. How dare you flash yourself in front of me and I'm going to kill you. They're not up there to eat. They can eat anything they want, any given time, right? They're amazing animals. So you really just, you've got to get to the point where you get that bait in front of them and you want to get that predatory sense. And most of the time they're whacking it and they're not eating it. So out of the 10, I've only hooked proper 6 out of 10. The other 4 are somewhere on the body.
Really just foul hooked somewhere.
That's right. And that's why you want to use a J for surface sword, not a circle.
Interesting. So as that relates to marlin, that's completely different, right?
Marlin is completely different. Blue marlin, the way I look at it, and I'm only talking about female blue marlin. I'm not talking about males. Males have a completely different life than female blue marlin. Female blue marlins have 2 purposes in life, to reproduce and to eat. And a female blue marlin do not travel as far as the perception. The perception is they travel thousands of miles. They do not. They travel barely hundreds of miles.
Really?
They're very, very specific. A female blue marlin consumes a ton of food. She knows exactly where the grocery store is at any given time. So that's why you rarely see a skinny female. Most of the females are husky, they're bulky, they're healthy. It's because they know exactly where their groceries are.
Yeah.
12 months out of the year, okay, they know where their groceries are, and they mate. In my opinion, this is not scientific, this is not my opinion, they mate in the 5 months leading up to the brightness of the sun. Okay, so after the sun starts to fade, you know, we have, you know, our longest day in the year, right?
Yeah.
So after that, I do not believe they're in the mating zone anymore. Then they go into a feeding zone. But there's 3 distinctive zones that we fish for females: transitory zone, feeding zone, and a mating zone. In a mating zone, you'll see 100 pounders all the way up to 1,000 pounders. Transitory zone, you'll see about the same. And then the feeding zone, you only see females. Azores is the feeding zone.
I see.
So last year we caught, I don't know the numbers, but you know, in that one crazy 7-day period, we caught 41 fish, and 28 of the 41 was over 500 pounds. It's just all females.
Wow. That's pretty crazy. What's the largest blue marlin that you've caught to date?
9s. So we caught over 220 blue marlin since the World Tour started. About half of it is over 500. You know, we hooked 5 that is well over the mark, and we let go 98.5%. So out of 220, we've taken only 3 fish.
Why?
There's really no reason to take them.
Yeah.
You know, we satellite tagged 5, and we're going to continue to invest in the satellite tag. You know, we let go a few that were, you know, 950 plus. But until we see one that's, you know, for sure over the mark, we're not going
to. I was going to say, is there one that you're waiting for that you're going to take home?
We certainly like to do the ultimate dream. Not a goal, maybe a goal, is all tackle records, 1403. And we've seen them over 14. I mean, we have many friends that have lost 1,600 pounders, even
really?
Pounders that are not fish swords. They're a real deal. But the big ones are hard to catch. You don't get big for being stupid.
What do you think it takes to get that 1,500 pounder?
You got to minimize your mistakes.
Yeah.
And you got to put time on water.
Yeah.
So time and water and minimize your mistakes and you have a shot.
I got you. So what's next for you? What's on tap next? Where are you headed? What's going on?
We're going to Africa. And then after Africa, we're going to start a North Atlantic tour, which is Madeira and Azores. And then and that will end in end of September.
Okay.
And then we're going to shift. And that's what makes the World Tour so unique, is that we're shifting from the South Atlantic to the North Atlantic and to the South Indian on the same year.
That's incredible. Wow.
It is. And, you know, we have the luxury of innovation and technology.
Yeah.
Previous legendary teams, and there's so many of them. I mean, I'll just mention a couple, you know, the Madam Hooker and French Luck, Tyson's Pride. And there's few. I'm sorry if I didn't name all of them. But the difference with those guys from 30 years ago is they just didn't have the machinery. They don't have the machinery that can go from Southern Hemisphere to Northern Hemisphere. They had the tow boats, can go at 80 knots. Our motherships cruise at 13.
Whoa.
I position very, very, very fast. And we have a private jet that takes us from place to place.
Yeah.
Where before, in the previous mothership campaigns, everybody stayed on board.
Yeah.
So you're away from your family 100% of the time.
Wow.
So we get to go home, catch up on life, and then go again.
It's nice to have the resources to do that.
Yeah, it really is.
That's great.
I'm very blessed.
So for those listening in and who are inspired by you, like I am myself, as just a nut job fisherman, as I think I am, and is it safe to say that you are the same? You know, you're crazy about fishing. What would you say to those that are coming up, you know, in my generation and younger, and trying to reach this level of excellence and passion and love for the sport?
The same thing I tell everybody, and that is, you know, everybody has to decide what is important to you, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, whether it's your professional journey, your personal accomplishments, your family accomplishments, and you know, it's hard, man. It's hard to balance everything out. And you know, I was fortunate to have about 80 days a year where I can be out fishing, and that gave me the sort of the peace and balance that I needed. But I knew that one of these days I was going to stretch it out. And, you know, fortunately for me, hopefully I've done a decent job as a dad. My kids are, you know, by next year, they'll all be off to college. And you know, dad's on the high seas.
Well, there you go, man. That's awesome. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Good luck to you on the high seas. And I can't keep to keep watching and staying, keeping in track. And I'll keep in touch with you. And hopefully, you know, maybe... hopefully sometime soon we can have another update on what's going on with the World Tour.
Yeah, we'd love to. We'd love to. You guys are great, and whatever I can do to participate and help.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Anthony.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys. You guys got to go check out Bad Company Fishing Adventures on social media. Their YouTube, their Instagram, everywhere they are. You guys are going to be astounded by what they do. Anthony and his team are world class, and you guys got to go check them out. See you guys next time on The Science of Fishing.
Thanks for joining us on The Science of Fishing. We hope that this episode was helpful and you learned something for the next time you're wetting a line. Before we cast off, a special thanks to our sponsors, Bloody Battery, Sea Mule and Black Reef Company. Stay hooked by following us on social media at Science of Fishing and hitting the subscribe button. And if you know someone who'd enjoy this, please share it with them. Until we meet again, catch them up.